5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
I welcome Dr. Ronald Dworkin, writing most recently at Civitas Outlook for Civitas Institute, about two terms that he will help me understand, over-medicalization and over-diagnosis. They're related but not, and it's a phenomenon that Ronald has found in a new book. And this is a review, his essay in Civitas is a review of this book, The Age of Diagnosis, How Our Obsession with Medical Labels is Making Us Sicker, by Suzanne O'Sullivan. It's on Amazon right now. Dr. Dworkin, Ron, a very good evening to you. Thank you for this. We'll begin with overdiagnosis and your recognition of it as something that is either fresh or available to us since our articulation is now enhanced by social media and the internet. What is overdiagnosis? Good evening to you, Ronald.
Thank you. Overdiagnosis is where people are with everyday medical problems that would not even have been considered medical problems years ago are now considered medical problems and herded into diagnostic categories. And it usually happens in two forms. One is new diagnoses are created, and they have been over the last 20, 30 years. Some examples are chronic Lyme disease, Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, some genetic disorders. And others are herded into old diagnoses. So the old diagnostic categories are expanded to include these other people who would not have been included in diagnostic categories, say, 40 years ago. That might be, for example, asthma, diabetes, polycystic ovary disease, so on.
Overdiagnosis, is it a function of specialization? Are we getting more and more articulate and demanding more articulation? For example, as children, we're taught to say, I think I have a cold. Now, that can be broken down in many directions. Is that overdiagnosis when you describe the specific trouble that a child is having?
Well, overdiagnosis as a phenomenon, we have to break it down to three possibilities. So it may be the person with the cold would not have been detected years ago, and now that person is detected. And that's a good thing. That person was ill, and medicine overlooked that person, and now we don't overlook the person. Another possibility, a more concerning possibility, is that people who would not have been diagnosed with any medical problem have now been herded into these categories when 30 years ago they would have been considered not to have any problem at all. So the question becomes, which is it? A third possibility is that we're getting sicker. And that's certainly possible. But the most likely problem, at least my observation as a physician, herding people into categories when they would not have been diagnosed with anything, say, 30, 40 years ago.
I note that there is some humor to this. At least I took it in some of the scenes you've referred to. For example, you go to a physician, and the physician asks you in general, GP, how are you feeling? You go, well, I've got a pain in my arm. Okay, I've got a pain in my arm. It doesn't need a diagnosis, but is there a modern, up-to-date tendency to say, well, let me look at that arm, maybe you should do x-rays, maybe you hurt it somehow, perhaps it's stretched? Is that something that happened in your early part of your career? You have been an anesthesiologist, so you've heard a lot of talk over the last decades. Or is it something that's fresh to just say, I've got a pain in my arm?
Yes. I mean, I think anesthesiologists and physicians in general did not take pain as seriously as they do now. They sometimes years ago, used to just sort of ignore it or say it was all in your head or it was mild pain, therefore unimportant. We're much more aggressive when it comes to people with pain, and we want to treat them with pain. As a result, by taking people's pain seriously, it's inevitable that we will conduct more tests, maybe put more people on medication. So it's not a wholly bad phenomenon. The problem is when people have a pain, that is sort of in a spectrum of life. Everyone has aches and pains, especially as they get older. Are we going to medicalize aging? Are all the problems of getting old, are they a medical problem? Life itself then risks becoming totally medicalized if that's the case. So there's no clear demarcation line. But as a result of doctors taking, say, pain much more seriously, they get much more aggressive. And there's also malpractice suits looming that they don't take patient's pain aggressively. They could be sued. So there's an extra incentive to be very serious about a person's pain. But all these things come together. The safest bet is simply on the part of a doctor is to be aggressive when it comes to diagnosing pain and treating it.
In your essay, you give an example of prostate cancer, which sounds very serious when I just say it like that. Prostate cancer, good heavens. And having been in a cancer clinic, I observe many of the men, the middle-aged men, are struggling with it and challenged by it and have good senses of humor, but they're aware that they're in treatment. However, you identify the possibility that if it hadn't been detected, it never would have been. Please explain.
Yes, and there are men who have the diagnosis of prostate cancer, very small, few cells, prostatic cancer cells discovered, prostate cancers that would not have developed over that rest of that person's lifetime, that would not have led to that person's demise. And instead of just leaving it be, and they are aggressively treat that patient, maybe with chemotherapy or with surgery, which has a lot of side effects. And so by aggressively putting someone in the diagnostic category of prostate cancer and treating all prostate cancers very aggressively, you actually cause more problems for these men because they would have had a much better quality of life if you simply left them alone.
All right, that's a mortal disease. Now you also have an example of asthma diagnosis. Now, asthma sounds bad. It sounds like something you've got to deal with seasonally or with remedy devices, drugs, or the breathing device. But what explains your reporting here that the diagnosis of asthma in the U.S. has risen 50% in the last three decades? Is our air quality descended or something?
Well, again, we have those three possibilities, and I can't say which of the three it is. Maybe we're more aggressive in diagnosing asthma when it was overlooked years ago and should not have been. They're simply having some shortness of breath. They respond one time to a bronchodilator. Therefore, by definition, they're given the diagnosis of asthma and they are treated for asthma the rest of their lives. So we can't say necessarily which it is, but it might be a bit of the latter. We're more aggressively treating people for problems that would have been sort of like mild or almost overlooked years ago. The problem is a little bit like the old story of the person in public relations. He told someone once, half my advertising budget is a waste of time. The only problem is I don't know which half. And so it's hard to tell if that particular asthma patient who's on the borderline would benefit from aggressive bronchodilation treatment or not. And so I can't say outright that everyone who is being diagnosed with asthma now is simply being herded into a diagnostic category inappropriately. Perhaps some people were overlooked years ago, and perhaps some people are sicker now because of maybe environmental reasons. But there is this third component that we really have to look at and understand that something's going on beyond simply people getting sicker or us detecting our detection methods improving and finding people who we once overlooked. There is a third component. We have to be judicious about this, understand what's going on.
The other term that Dr. O'Sullivan uses in her book that you're reviewing is over-medicalization, which is related to over-diagnosis. What does it look like, Ronald?
Over-medicalization, you're right, it's somewhat connected to over-diagnosis in the sense that if you give someone with an everyday problem a diagnosis, you've naturally brought them into medicine's orbit and you will treat them. The problem is you can probably medicalize every aspect of life. So I mentioned aging, for example, the aches and pains of aging, the loss of sexual drive with aging, and so on. Well, these were considered natural parts of aging. We wouldn't have treated them years ago, but now they are medicalized. Another example is mental health. People with everyday unhappiness are considered to have sort of minor depression. Therefore, they're brought into the category of depression and treated aggressively, just as people with major depression are treated with antidepressants. So all of life has some kind of ache or pain or problem or trouble. And in theory, you could bring every aspect of life into medicine's orbit by thinking that way.
I've noted, and it's not an example you use, perhaps Dr. O'Sullivan does, I've noted in social conversations over these last years that really smart people invariably are touched by the idea of, well, the way it's put is somewhere on the spectrum, which I think is saying I'm not socially adept or I've lived a life in which I've been lonely or something like that. It's become common parlance. Now, those are not professional remarks. This is social exchanges, people identifying something about themselves. Is that part of over-medicalization, that we're borrowing that language, turning it into a metaphor and trying to make it acceptable?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, people years ago would have been embarrassed to say that they had depression.
Yeah.
And now when they say they have depression, it somehow legitimizes their experience as a medical condition. I've known people who have, say, mental illnesses, very mild problems, trouble. But once they medicalize it and give it a name, they gather a certain kind of respect from others. And so they don't feel as badly about having their trouble. They say it's not their fault. They say it's a medical problem. And so it relieves the person, the patient, the person who's now a patient, of having a stigma associated with their condition. And they actually have a condition. And so they don't necessarily feel proud, but they certainly don't feel as embarrassed as before. And that's a part of the whole medicalization process, where you go ahead and you give yourself a diagnosis. You say you have a problem that's a medical concern, and therefore it becomes more respectable in polite society.
The power of suggestion, you also identify, and I think this is probably under the over-medicalization category, that once you're told something about yourself, you're somewhere on the idea of being alienated, or you're somewhere depressed. That is something you cannot unlearn. Now, that strikes me as philosophy, but at the same time, I think you're testifying that this can burden people for their lifelong. Is that correct, Doctor?
Yeah, it's sort of like the reverse of the placebo effect. I'm sure many of your listeners have known about the placebo effect, where you give someone sugar water and you tell them it's real medicine and they feel better.
Yeah.
The nocebo effect is the opposite, where you tell them that they have a problem, although they really don't, and they believe it, and they begin to become miserable, and they begin to find symptoms that they otherwise would not have even noticed. So when you give someone a diagnosis and you tell them they're sick, it begins to have an effect on their minds, and they begin to develop real symptoms as a result, not just symptoms of depression, but sometimes people are going to have symptoms even of seizures, psychosomatic-induced seizures, where they feel so ill, they focus on every symptom, that they actually begin to develop physical symptoms. So the to be labeled a diagnosis has actually physical consequences for people. They can become physically ill as a result over time.
In your career as an anesthesiologist, you've consulted with a number of surgeons and different kinds of doctors. Is the recognition of over-medicalization, is that common conversation between physicians these days, or is that something new?
Only on the margins. I mean, most physicians, at least anesthesiologists and surgeons, they notice when their patients come in that the patients have on their problem, medical problem list, maybe 15 to 20 diagnoses, when, say, 30 years ago, we all would have noticed they had 4 or 5 diagnoses. So we notice that something's going on. And that observation is not nothing. I once wrote a book many years ago, Artificial Happiness, because I noticed that many patients were coming in on antidepressants. This is back in the late 1990s. And sure enough, that was a phenomenon worth paying attention to. In this case, it's the same thing. I think many doctors haven't really thought about what the reason for the overdiagnosis is and why so many people are coming in with these different diagnoses on their problem list. But they have observed the phenomena and they do talk about it, but probably just in the margins, that they haven't really tried to explore it, I think.
The book.
When you're in, when you're inside a professional community, it really takes, it's hard to break out of the mindset of your professional community, and you get yourself into a loop and you think this is how it should be. Sometimes it takes an outsider to looking in to kind of see something might be going on here. So it doesn't come naturally to doctors because they're within medicine and they're naturally prone to making diagnoses. That's what they do. So it's not surprising that doctors wouldn't focus on this too much.
The book is The Age of Diagnosis, How Our Obsession with Medical Labels is Making Us Sicker. The book is by Suzanne O'Sullivan, and Dr. Ronald Dworkin is reviewing it for Civitas Outlook at the Civitas Institute. I'm John Batchelor.
Are you a fraud-paying American? One in four tax-paying Americans has been a victim of identity fraud. With LifeLock, if your identity is stolen, they fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Last year, billions in refunds were stolen. Could be from your salary, overtime, or second job. Gone. But this year, you don't need to stay a victim. Because this tax season, fraud-paying American is something no American should have to claim. Save up to 40% your first year. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.
Quick, choose a meal deal with McValue. The $5 McChicken meal deal, the $5 McDouble meal deal, or the new $6 Daily Double meal deal. Each with its own small fries, drink, and four-piece McNuggets.
It's actually no rush. I'm just excited for McDonald's.
For a limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Not valid for McDelivery.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.